Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Cuts it on the right foot. Launches a golazo!
It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, score!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer and brought to you in part by Michelob Ultra, official beer sponsor of FIFA World Cup 26.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Let's kick it. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Kind of a different style here as we're getting started on YouTube instead of the very quick, hurried segment that I did on air because the College World Series game was the longest baseball game on record. No, not really. It wasn't that long, but it was pretty long. It was about 3.5 hours. Our Georgia Bulldogs eliminated in the College World Series, unfortunately. It kept getting close until Oklahoma pulled away, and then the game just dragged on forever. So we ran out of time to do a full show on radio. That means this is going to be kind of a hybrid. It's going to be conversational because we're also watching the second half of Colombia and Uzbekistan while this is happening. But there are a few things that we will try to hit to make it feel somewhat like a normally structured show because I know a lot of you catch it on the podcast edition. It's been cool to run into folks and who have talked about various things that we have said. And there are a lot of people who are getting into the Panini stickers. And Madison Cruz is one of them. And I think she's working on her album right now.
Yeah, I am. I will say too, actually, like even today, as I was doing a couple of things that they'll be coming out soon. Just that's my teaser.
Oh, wow. Look at you.
But someone was actually talking to me today about how they were listening to it on the radio, like literally last night. We're like, it was so cool hearing you and Jason, like yapping about, you know, everything and everything with the World Cup. So that's pretty cool. But I am working on my Panini sticker book. I don't know if I'm lagging on your end. I think I'm lagging on my end, but it's all right.
We'll live. Anyway,
it's all right. I did get the man, the myth, the legend though.
Who is it?
Cape Verde.
Ah, very nice. Vozinha.
Yeah, Vozinha. I got him. So I got the guy. So this honestly might be actually going for a lot right now, actually. Honestly.
No, I would imagine not, because I don't think any of the regular cards are going, or stickers, are going for a lot. I think it's the variants are the ones that will get you right now.
I do have a lot of, I have my full setup. I got my book. Putting my little stickers in. I have my mango cart, and listen, I know we obviously are Atlanta Braves, but I did in fact get a Cubs glass. I do have my mango cart in it, and then I also am snacking on M&M pretzels. I haven't had these in so long, and they're so good.
I think I've had those before.
They're really good. I must say.
If it's what I'm thinking, they actually were very good, but it's been a long time.
They're very yummy, I must say.
Uzbekistan has battled in this one, but they gave up a goal late in the first half, and that's always difficult. I'll be curious to see if they open up a little bit here in the second half or if they kind of hold on defensively for where they are for now. I mean, the group is in a weird spot after Portugal's disappointing performance against DR Congo. I don't know if Cristiano Ronaldo stayed up late last night to watch Lionel Messi and then couldn't sleep because he was upset. And maybe just was a little tired today because, yeah, he didn't really do much.
No, I didn't do anything. I think for Portugal, they were a team, I think, that a lot of people looked at. And I think when you look at the talent they have, I mean, yeah, you want to look at them as maybe possibly a team that could come through and, You know, I think they're one of the, they're not the top contenders, but I think a lot of people thought that they would be kind of around like that margin of who could possibly sneak in after
today. You'd be surprised. No, there were a lot of people who picked him to win. And one of them we know well, and Kevin Egan, he picked Portugal to win the World Cup. Yes.
Wow. Okay, Kevin.
That was like the cool kind of different pick that I saw a lot of people going with before the tournament. And I said exactly what I'll say right now to them then. How are you going to manage Cristiano Ronaldo and his ego? Because we went through this in the last World Cup. And now he's 3.5 years older. And he had two chances today, and they were not well taken. No, bad. So, and he stayed in and played the whole game. Like, no, just no. I don't think Roberto Martinez can stand up and say, hey, this team is better with you on the bench. And I don't know if he would accept that, because that's kind of how it got in the last World Cup, and it became a problem.
Yeah.
I don't know why people thought that was going to magically go away, because I don't think Cristiano Ronaldo has found humility during his time in the Saudi Pro League.
Yeah, I didn't rate them. I thought that like they could, if they maybe got a couple things together, maybe. But I don't know. I didn't rate them, I think, to finish like semifinal or even final. That's shocking. I didn't know Kevin picked Portugal to
go. Quite a few people did. No, I mean, it's not. They were number 5 in the FIFA rankings, which I, you know, okay, fine. But their issue, I did not think was something they could overcome, because somebody has to make the bold decision of telling CR7, you're no longer a starter with this team. You actively make the team worse when you're on the field. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening, because they have so much talent. And it's not balanced correctly, and you're not getting anything out of your striker. And this isn't a new problem. That's the thing. And it, I guess Roberto Martinez, it's new for him because he wasn't there in the last World Cup, but it's not going to go away until somebody makes the difficult decision. Or, you know, I don't know. It just, somebody retires. I mean, that's basically where you're at, because we've seen this happen at times where you have a legendary player who doesn't want to admit that their best days are behind them. And it's a shame, because, and I've never been like a gigantic Cristiano Ronaldo fan. I saw him when he was very young at Manchester United, goes to Real Madrid. He goes from being a tricky winger who was just amazing on the dribble to one of the best number nines the game's ever seen. And you have to give him his flowers and his props and all of that. But also now it's sad to see him making a good team worse and nobody seeming to be able to make the decision to stop that.
I feel like at some point, like, I feel like you're having the kind of the same conversation. And after I get done with this thought, I might jump out and then rejoin again, because I'm lagging like crazy and I don't know what's going on. But anyway, I'll give my point now. I think a lot of people, when we're talking about, like, I think especially those guys, I mean, the conversation, I think, obviously becomes to Neymar. I mean, the discussions about him being a part of the Brazil side now, and obviously he hasn't been able to play.
It's different, but, you know, though. Go ahead, but I think it's different.
I think it's different too. But, you know, you have that kind of play with it. I think it's different because I think for Cristiano Ronaldo, I feel like you haven't seen what we normally would see from him. I don't think you've seen that in like the last couple of like years.
I'll go a step further. I think we have seen what you would normally expect for him in the last couple of years. And that's the problem. He's not playing at a level that is good enough anymore. And, you know, you get found out at this level when you're playing with a myth. And he's a myth right now. He's not a real player like he used to be, because Father Time comes for everybody, except for maybe Lionel Messi at this point. But he's going to have it happen to him, too. It's just the issue, I think, when it comes to Ronaldo is he's there to score goals, period. That's it. He's not there to create. He's not there to really lead, because I don't think he does that extremely well just not his personality, and that's fine. It's not everybody's personality. Like, all these things are fine, except for the fact that the team is worse with him on the field. And that's not acceptable. And somebody's got to make the decision to not keep doing that over and over again.
Fair enough. All right. I'm going to be right back. I'm joining in a second. I'm going to hope.
Okay.
Fix it. I'll be back.
The podcast is going to be very confused at all this, but that's okay. You log off and log back in and we'll see if it fixes it. Or she just freezes. That works too. All of these things are possible. It's one of those nights, ladies and gentlemen. It's just been absurd. Let's see if it's any better now or not. The Panini sticker gremlins.
There we go. Why is there two of me?
I don't know what is happening now. You've been cloned, it looks like.
I'm cloned. All right. Well, maybe I don't know what's happening, guys.
I don't know how to get rid of the clone.
I don't
there
either.
We go. The clone is gone.
Maybe it's better now. I'm also realizing that the thing is obviously your tag, not mine. But anyway, we're back. Hopefully it's better. And if not, well, then I apologize.
Anything can happen on a night like this where baseball games take 4 hours and all the things happen. It did actually take 4 hours. It was a 4-hour game. That's absurd. Even with the hydration breaks that everybody seems to get very upset about, soccer matches are not lasting 4 hours. That's for sure. Even if it goes into extra time once we get into the later rounds. So for people listening, no, it's not going to happen. Don't even worry about that. All these people trying to make up these stories about these things that the greedy Americans are doing to ruin the game. It's not happening. It's a 3-minute break in each half. It'll be okay. But anyway, I digress. It's one of those nights, like I was saying, if you're listening on the podcast, you're like, what is happening to this show tonight? And we don't know. That's basically where we're at. Colombia's leading 1-0 against Uzbekistan 10 minutes into the second half. Earlier today, we talked about Portugal and DR Congo. I thought DR Congo was very good and could have won the match a couple of times. Portugal just has to figure this out. We'll see if they do. They get Uzbekistan in their next game, which could be really interesting because we've seen Uzbekistan defend very well in this one against Colombia. I think Portugal on paper is a more talented team across the field than Colombia. But can they break down again without a functional number nine? Can they break down a team that sits deep? I'm not sure that they can. And that's going to create an interesting dilemma because it really reminds me of the last World Cup where you get into it. It's a slow start. You get into it. And then you start to see what the issue is, and nobody wants to do anything about it. And then it becomes a bigger issue because then everybody, it's not just, all right, they could be better on the field if they did this. It's then ego. It's then history. It's then legend, icon, and all of those things that you have to manage that are bigger than the actual games on the field. So we'll have to see if they handle that. Colombia could be in great, great shape with a win here. They play DR Congo next, which will be a very interesting game. I think what could be a pretty wide open game between Colombia and DR Congo. That could be one of the real, real fun ones in this tournament. England-Croatia was a lot of fun today. Ooh. And I would not have necessarily pegged that one for being a wide open 6-goal kind of match, but the first half was back and forth and good. And in the second half, England played like a team that is a contender to win the World Cup. They had a great second half and got it done. Harry Kane leads the way, but Jude Bellingham was brilliant in the second 45. And England gets the 4-2 win over the other top team in that group, Croatia.
That one was, I was catching it sporadically because I was obviously grabbing some content and stuff at a South Africa's match day minus one training session up at Kennesaw. So I was kind of intermittent of like hearing a couple things, seeing what was going on and everything else. The last I had like actually tuned in, it was 2-2. And I was like, oh, okay, here we go. But I think I agree with you. I thought England first half, it was an even game. Like I thought it was very even. Yep. It was very split. Like it was very back and forth. It was a fun game, I think, in the first half. And it wasn't a fun game. It was a fun game in the second too. I just think England, I think, started to find their moments more and found their rhythm more, I think, in the second half. And you saw it with Jude Bellingham. I think, you heard it around the stadium afterwards, you know, singing, "Hey Jude." I mean, like, seriously, like, you, if he can get on it, and I think this England side, they are a contender. And I think for me, it's the consistency of it. Can we see it again in the next coming match? Can we see it continue to be this way? Because I feel like sometimes that's where it falls off a little bit. I feel like you don't see them that consistent sometimes, and that can be their issue. So I want to see consistency from England, especially heading into the second game.
Yeah. I mean, they giving up two goals in the first half was a little surprising, but Croatia is a very good team. The second goal from Petr Musa of FC Dallas was really impressive.
That was incredible. That was gorgeous.
This is a Croatian team that, if you told me they were going to lose to England, I would not have been shocked. I think Croatia is not what they were as a finalist in 2018. You know, it's 8 years later. They shouldn't be, and they have a lot of the same guys. England has gotten younger, and England is maybe, like you say, a little more inconsistent because they're younger, which happens, and you've got to grow into the tournament. I think the balancing act, and look, this goes back to Portugal. This goes to an England. This goes to everybody in the tournament. You don't want to play your first. You don't want your best game to be your first game. You want to improve. You want to build as the tournament goes on. And you've got to find a way to do that. And England showed a lot of good things that they can build on. You just have to do them more often and not get hurt and give up two goals in the way that you did. We talk about Brazil. You know, you can't start the way that you did against Morocco. You flip it over, you talk about Morocco. It's like you can't lose control of the game the way that you did. I think out of what we've seen so far in this tournament, you know, and we've seen everybody now for at least 60 minutes, and Uzbekistan just levels it.
Oh, wow.
Wow. What a goal for Uzbekistan. The first save was really good, and the rebound fell. So 1-1. Got 30 more minutes in this one. But we talk about who we've seen and how they would rate themselves. And if we were doing a power ranking, like some people have, that is very performative and silly, I would have, and yes, I'm biased, but I'd have Argentina number one because they didn't really have any flaws. They were playing a good team in Algeria, but not a great team in Algeria. And that has to be part of the conversation. France is absolutely right there. I'd probably put them two because they had moments in the first half where they didn't look great against Senegal, who is a better team than Algeria. Mm-hmm. But then they took control and they were great in the second half. And Kylian Mbappe was a hoss. So those two, Germany three. I mean, I'm totally making this up off the top of my head without like having it on paper.
I would probably, just for my thing, I would probably make France one, Argentina two, but those are also interchangeable, I feel like, for me right now, because I feel like that would be crazy to see a rematch between both of them in the final.
It could be. They're on opposite sides of the bracket if they both win their group, but
sanity.
I'm doing my power ranking not based on what they were coming in, because if you were doing that, I'd agree with you, because France didn't do enough to fall a lot. Spain did, so they fall out of one. Because for me, it was Spain one. France was a little further back for me going in. If you just went by the FIFA power rankings, France was what? Two, I think.
Yeah, I'm not going off the power rankings. I'm going solely because it's kind of like what you were talking about with Argentina. Mine's flipped, I think, especially when you come with France and Senegal. I think Senegal, obviously, you look at everything else, Senegal's a better team than Algeria. And I think that in that matchup, they squared up, they found the rhythm at the beginning. I think for Argentina, it was a matchup where, again, Lionel Messi creates magic in that moment. But again, I just don't think they've been challenged in a way. And so for me, I feel like France, I think, is number one still in my book, just right now.
The reason I'd put Argentina higher is I think Algeria is a top probably four team out of Africa. They beat the Netherlands in Rotterdam before the tournament. So you have to give them, I think, some credit. and they just never were able to get going in the game. It wasn't like France, where it's okay, France was not good for 45 minutes. Senegal was good, but France was also not good. And Argentina was either right there the same as Algeria or much, much better. They were never bad.
Yeah,
so, you know, it's just through 90 minutes. Like, that's all going to evolve if we're going to keep doing this. So Argentina won France to their... What's that?
I got a question for you, actually.
Go
now
ahead.
That we're kind of talking about power rankings.
Go
I know
ahead.
We're obviously...
We're just making this up.
Yeah, we're just, you know what? Hey, it's late night AST. We're watching a 1-1 draw right now between Uzbekistan and Colombia. We're having a great time. When we were looking at the power rankings right now, obviously excluding France and Argentina, interchangeable one or two, whatever you want to put that as. Mm-hmm. When you look at the next coming ones, where would you place the U.S.?
And again, I'm not doing this for performative reasons to get a rise out of people. I think... For me, they were like around 15 or 16 coming in. So that doesn't completely guide me, but I mean, I'm not going to put them third, you know, like I'm not going to put them that high. I'm even a little reluctant to get super high on Germany because of the opponent. I think Curaçao, you know, how much can you take from that? Paraguay, we'll find out how much you can take from the U.S. win.
Yep.
I was disappointed in how they looked because I expected more from them. I thought the U.S. was also really good.
Same.
So now we need to see, all right, Paraguay against somebody else. How do they look? If they look good, then you feel better about the U.S. win. If they don't look good, then you have to kind of take that with a grain of salt. So,
yeah.
I mean, out of my like contenders group, my like top group, the four, and Spain would be now at the back end of that four. England would be behind France for me. And Colombia goes back on top. Lucho Diaz.
Oh, yeah. Uzbekistan keeper ain't happy about that.
Wow.
He's right to be upset
he
about that.
He should have done better, though, himself.
Yeah, no, he should have. Yeah.
We'll have to get another look at that. I mean... There's a few different things on it, but I thought the keeper got both hands on it and didn't keep it out. That's not good. Colombia has taken over the Estadio Azteca. It is yellow everywhere like a Club America match. But
oh,
Lucho Diaz, big time.
That's so cool. Oh, to be in that atmosphere right now, gosh.
So it's a throw-in for Uzbekistan in the middle third. They lose it, and then it's a 3-2... Yeah, the keeper's frustrated about losing it on the throw-in, but the keeper also needs to do better on that. He gets one hand to it, doesn't keep it out. He can be frustrated about having to deal with the shot. I think he needs to make that save.
Yeah.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, real people tell their stories live on stage.
I burst into tears. And I wasn't sure if I was crying because I hadn't been kissed in a really long time or if I had just never been kissed like that before.
To hear fascinating, heartbreaking, and sometimes hilarious stories from astronauts, teachers, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, it's unfortunate when you give up the throw-in like that. That's something you can't do, especially after
you can't have that turnover.
You just got the goal to equalize, and then you get a throw-in there, and you lose the throw-in. That can't happen. I do agree. I think initially watching it, I didn't see how the look was for the keeper. I agree with you though. That should have been handled a little bit better.
You want him to make that save.
Yeah.
I mean,
yes,
is it a horrible mistake? No. Is it, you know, it's not a howler. It's, you want him to make that save, and I think he's capable of it, and he doesn't in that moment.
Yeah.
So Uzbekistan down 2-1, 67th minute. They've looked good in the second half, and they've looked good as they've gotten out to play a little bit more, which has been good to see. They're always going to be defensively slanted, which is, you know, it's expected with this group. It's acceptable with this group because... This is their first tournament. The level of player is less than Colombia, so you're going to have to defend a little bit more. That's okay. But I've actually liked when they've gotten out more. So that's been cool to see.
They've been fun to watch. I will say, I think this tournament has made me a blue shark slash white wolf, or both. Right now,
I mean, but that's what the World Cup is. You fall in love with teams that you've never had a chance to see, and underdog stories are always fun, and you get behind that. Like that's what a tournament is. I mean, that's what's cool, because you're going to have teams you root for, obviously your home team, and like you might have another team that means something to you. Like I've said before, I mean, I'm lucky. Like the first team that I saw was Argentina, so they're kind of like a home team for me because I didn't get to see the U.S. at first. So I have two teams that I root for pretty hard. But then game to game, I mean, there's just teams you like to watch play, and there's teams you don't really like to watch play. And, you know, we always talk about it, like how we see it and how we feel it, maybe more importantly. So that factors in. I mean, Portugal, like I'm hard on Portugal because it's just frustrating that they keep doing the same thing. I get hard on teams that I think are talented and don't open up to play more. I do like what Thomas Tuchel's doing with England. I really do. He's tapping into what I think being an English team is, which is being intense, which is being high pressure, high tempo, brave. I think he's really tapping into that. And it's always interesting when you get, and we're seeing this here in the U.S., when you get somebody who looks at a soccer culture from the outside and then comes into it and maybe helps you define it more clearly, because it's really easy if you have, and England hasn't had, Southgate was pretty English. Before that, you had went through the Capello era where it's like he was trying to make them into something else. I think Southgate maybe towards the end was trying to make them into something else. And Tuchel comes in and he's like, no, you're English. Play like it. And how much has Pochettino said those kind of similar things about the U.S.? And there's actually a lot of similarities in what both coaches are asking their teams to be. Be bold, be brave, be aggressive, defend high up the field, make it difficult for the opponent. Don't let them get comfortable.
Yeah.
Both coaches are asking the same thing, but they're tapping into what it means to be a U.S. player or what it means to be an English player, and they're not English or from the U.S., but they get it.
Yeah. It's when we talk about like other like stories to cling to, like obviously I think you asked me and Sofia Cupertino. Obviously, I think our other country that we are definitely looking forward to, especially I think in the tournament, is obviously Morocco. My big reason, one of my favorite players is obviously Ashraf Hakimi. I really love him as a player. I really do. I don't know. I just like from watching him with PSG, from watching him develop. I mean, I just really like him as a player. I'll tell you what, though, after seeing it today, and they were someone that I was really curious and like looking forward to seeing. Honestly, Colombia is the other one that I really do like. I like the way that they play. I like, I don't know. I think their fan base. I love the way that they play. Obviously, there's so many key players on their side that I really enjoy watching playing. They're a fun side. I'm excited to see where they go in the tournament.
The giant oversized fan heads of Carlos Valderrama and Rene Higuita are pretty cool in the stands.
I love it. And even like, what is it? Even Uzbekistan. I mean, like even especially obviously with Fabio Cannavaro leading the charge, especially for the White Wolves too. I like the way that they've played. Like, I feel like they've played really well and they've held their own. I think, especially with the physicality. And I mean, obviously we talk about the game. I think now there is that level to it. But I think there's a balance with it. I feel like Uzbekistan is kind of finding that balance again, because you have to be very defensive against a team like Colombia in this moment when you maybe won't have the ball a lot. Now they might have it a little bit more because Colombia is going to be probably holding on a little bit, but they're going to keep trying to find probably another goal or maybe three, who knows. But I like the way Uzbekistan's playing a lot. I really do.
They play really different. And I mean, these two teams are like opposites, because Uzbekistan, they just don't have the level of player to be as on the front foot as a Colombian team could. And that's fine. That's part of the progression. And I think it's unfair when pundits or Confederation leadership talks about teams being uninteresting or they don't deserve to be there and all that kind of nonsense. You can't know what it means and what it takes to be there until you get there.
I agree.
And we've seen this with the, you know, I think back to the U.S. in 1990, and Chris Henderson talked about it when I did an interview with him before the tournament. You had players who had never played at that kind of a level, that kind of intensity, that kind of scrutiny, and some really struggled with it until they learned and went through it, and in the next tournament, they were better. And that's part of this process. That's why I do think it's good to have the expansion. It's going to be good for an Uzbekistan, and sometimes that process happens really quick, and you see them grow up in a tournament. We talked about teams progressing. We'll see. I mean, the level of player is the level of player. And when you look at the level of talent, they're going to have to rely on scheme. They're going to have to rely on defending. They're going to have to rely on those things because of just the level of talent that they have. Colombia is a different conversation entirely. We know how good they can be. They haven't often been consistent enough to get there. They had the great run in the Copa America where they got to the final and lost to Argentina in 24. They had the great run in the World Cup in 14 where they lost to Brazil in the quarterfinals. Those are their two biggest tournaments of really modern times of the last couple of decades. They have a lot of individual talent, but they've always been very up and down. And it does feel like they're on the rise, even with relying on somebody like James, who is towards the back end of his career. Quintero is still part of the group towards the back end of his career. They've got some young players coming up who are going to be good ones. Yerry Mina is still in this group as well at the back end of his career. You've got an interesting blend right now with Colombia of veteran and youth, and then you have somebody in their prime like Luis Diaz, who is going to carry them as far as they can go this time around. I think quarterfinal is possible. If the chips fall the right way, you might be able to go further. But I think they're a top eight team. They're definitely a round of 16 team. If they don't get to the round of 16, that would be a big disappointment. I feel about the same as I did coming in, where the March window for me with Colombia made me slide them backwards just a little bit because they played France, they played Croatia. There was a difference in level. You could see it, especially with France. And it's like, okay, I like a lot of what they want to do and what they're trying to do, but they can't quite do it against the best of the best.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Like that's who you are. And I think that's where we get kind of messed up here in the US at times as you start to look ahead to Friday. It's this thing where it's either they're awful or they should make the semifinal. And neither. They are a round of 16 team. They can go further. But that's kind of who they are. If they don't get there, it's a disappointment. If they get past that, yeah, that would be an amazing summer. And yep, it's okay to understand like what your level is. To strive to be more than that, to hope for the miracle run that we all hope for and, you know, every country wants to see, but to understand like you are who you are.
Yeah.
And I feel like at times some countries do it worse than others where they completely lose sight of actually who they are and yeah, try to be something else, either in terms of the way they play or what their expectations are.
I feel like, and honestly, like, I feel like it kind of goes back to the conversation we were having about Portugal a little bit, where I feel like, again, you're so stuck in your own way in certain areas
yeah, with
that you don't grow. Like, and that's another element of it too, like where it's like, it's almost like a flip side of it where it's, you know, you expect that, oh, you're going to put him in and, you know, magic's going to happen. And that's what's going to happen. But the last couple of times, the last couple of years, we've seen Portugal, especially with Cristiano Ronaldo leading the charge. You haven't seen it. And yet nobody's wanting to make the change and make the step. And if anything, that's pushing Portugal back in a lot yeah, a lot of things. And honestly, my personal opinion, maybe blocking some other talent that probably could help this team.
Yeah, and, well, Gonzalo Ramos, and I think other players who aren't maybe in the position, but are affected by him being in the team and the way that he plays. I think you don't get the best out of Bruno Fernandes, for example.
I would agree.
Is coming off an incredible season with Manchester United, and he can't really be himself in this group in the same way.
Yeah, and so like when you have the conversations of like, I think some countries like maybe not knowing, I think their level. I feel like it kind of comes with the same thing, especially when you go to like picking some of those moments. I feel like Portugal is one of the teams where it's almost like they expect it, I think, with everything going on. But then you have the patterns you've seen, and it's like, yes, you're thinking this, but nothing is showing on the pitch to back that up. So, there's
this like weird in between where, and Portugal's an interesting one to settle on with this, because Portugal's never won the World Cup. They're a great soccer nation, but they've never won the World Cup. They've made a couple of deep runs. Not many. When I was a kid and seeing like the game really, you know, in my mind start to grow, like I didn't rate Portugal as a top team because I saw them in the 86 World Cup and then I didn't see them again until 2002.
Yeah.
Because they missed out on tournaments because they weren't at that level. Now they had been at that level in the 60s with Eusebio, who's one of the all-time greats. They had a great World Cup in 66. They had a great World Cup in 06. And I think it's interesting that I don't think you're wrong. I think they do have an expectation internally. This isn't a fan or a media expectation. I think they think they're better than they are.
Yeah.
And you have to do that on the way up for me. Like, for the U.S., for example, who I don't think is as talented as Portugal. We saw it in the friendly. I think there's a gap, okay? But when you go into that game and you just go into the mentality of being a U.S. team, you have to think you're better than you are. You have to, it's like fake it till you make it, you know? Like, you've got to be confident. You've got to be bold. You've got to overdo it to prove yourself. But then once you get into that, either top tier or right below the top tier, you got to understand if you're Portugal and you play England, France, Spain, Argentina, you're the underdog.
Yeah.
And you got to understand that going in. You got to have that mentality and then you play that game that way. I don't think Portugal's ever been able to truly, and some of it is about Ronaldo, I don't think they've ever been able to be humble enough to play in that way against teams that in that way at times. I think Belgium went through this as well, where they were super talented and got really close to breaking through and becoming a World Cup winning kind of team. And they didn't. And now they're on the back end of that. I think Portugal's got a new generation coming. Vitinha. João Neves, like, you've got so many good players coming through. Fernandes coming off his best year as a pro. You've got so much on the way up, but you've got this huge issue, which is unique to them in this tournament. There's not another team that has this issue, because your players of that category who are around 40, Edin Dzeko is not in the starting lineup with every game with Bosnia and Herzegovina and doesn't feel like he's weighing the team down. Obviously Messi's not weighing the team down.
Gosh.
You know, you look at other veterans like, I mean, Tim Ream for the U.S. and it's a very different situation, but Tim Ream's performing, you know, and he's about the team and the group. And it's just, it's a weird thing. And it's a weird balancing act. And it's very difficult to get over the hump in world soccer. That's why every time we go into a tournament and it becomes the hot pick to pick somebody who's never won the World Cup, I'm always really reluctant to do it because it's such a small group in modern times. If you take Uruguay out of the group because they won two World Cups in 1930 and 1950, Okay, that's a long time ago. Doesn't, not that it doesn't count, it doesn't impact today.
Yeah.
I think same thing. You have to take England out of the group because they won one, but it was 66 and it was at home. You take that out because modern players or their parents didn't live that.
Yeah.
So who are we talking about who knows what it means to be a World Cup champion in the modern game right now? We're talking about Argentina.
Yep.
We're talking about France.
Yep.
We're talking about Germany.
Yep.
We're talking about Spain. That takes you back to 2010.
Mm-hmm.
Italy, but they're not here, and you can't even have them in this conversation because they've missed the last three, so they've fallen, yeah. They've taken themselves out of the conversation.
Sorry, Nick.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the last four, okay? Then you go to Italy, and then you get to Brazil, which is a fascinating one because they've won the most, but their last one was 2002. Does that resonate anymore? I think they have the issue now of thinking they're better than they are. The only four who I think, and even Spain maybe were pushing it with that, but I'm going to include them in it because I think they play like championship level team and they just won the Euros. So yeah. I'm going to keep Spain in this group. The only four who can have that swagger, that aura, Spain, France, Germany, Argentina.
I agree.
I don't know if anybody else deserves to have it. So like when we talk about making picks and who are the top teams, I'm always going to go to those because they've been there and they've done that and they've proven it in the last 20 years.
Yeah. I mean, because again, I think when you obviously you have these picks and you want to have a moment where like, you know, you do have maybe a team. I mean, I think back to Morocco back in 2022.
Great
I
run. Mean, yeah.
They made it all the way to the semifinal. I mean, they were the darlings of the tournament. And, you know, unfortunately, they fell short. But, I mean, what a stamp on everything for Morocco. And now they're considered trying to still continue to move on and continue to do it. And now they're considered another top country, especially when you look at this World Cup.
I'll actually remind you of something that I've said consistently. Because I don't put them there yet. Because they've got to get to the quarterfinals this time. They've got to be consistent.
That's true.
Like Croatia has put themselves into this conversation because they got to the final in 18. They got to a semifinal in 22. You go back to 98, they got to a semifinal. But in the last 20 years, the last two World Cups is a final and a semifinal. They're banging on the door of this conversation, even if this generation is old. Morocco, one great tournament is a blast. But Turkey went to the semifinals in 2002 and then didn't qualify again until this time.
But also Morocco, again, you look at everything too. I mean, it's the same conversation with the Euros in Spain. I mean, to be fair, that also is a little.
Well, be careful with that one.
Just a little bit. Be a little careful with that. But I mean, still, I mean, that kind of factors in a little bit too, but
to a point, I do put AFCON on a slightly different scale, just like I put the Gold Cup and the Asian Cup. And it's not that they don't matter. It's that winning it or kind of being handed to you, winning it. It's not quite as impressive as the Euros or Copa America. It's impressive.
It's one for me, I think, especially like in the conversation where we're having this. I think when I go to look in picks, like obviously you want to see some of those teams where you want to see that Cinderella run. You want to see some of those teams
love to.
You want to see those teams. You want to see a Colombia make it to the semifinal or a quarterfinal or whatever. You want to see the U.S. make it to a semifinal or anything like that. But again, when we're talking about making picks, like, and again, when it's like, who's your favorite of the tournament? You know, yeah, I think I have a couple of ideas of who I think is definitely going to be at the end of this. But for me to sit there and say, oh, yeah, it's going to be the likes of Portugal or Colombia or Ecuador or Morocco when they haven't won it and they haven't gotten there yet. Yeah, I'm not going to do that. Like, I'm going to go with an Argentina or a France, because both of them were in the final last year. The most insane final I've ever witnessed, and honestly just a very competitive game between two top sides, I think, in the world. I think when you look at both of those teams, yeah, those are the teams that I'm going for. I'm going for those two. I'm going for a Spain.
Well, hold on. I want to make sure people understand what you mean when you say that, because we can go in a million different directions. You're using a phrase and saying going for that some people could take as rooting. I have teams that I root for that I want to see do well, that I'd love to see do well. It could be a player. It could be the style of play. It could be a coach. I'm not predicting them to do something. Sure. I'm rooting for them. So going for, you're saying picking. You're talking prediction. Picking. Okay.
Yeah, I'm talking prediction. Because
I just want people to understand that.
I'm going for more predictions with this than anything.
Because it is different.
Yeah, because there are teams, especially from what we've seen in the first couple of group stage matches, I'm rooting for a couple of teams. Like, to just continue and see them do well. There's players that I really like to see, especially breakthrough in the tournament that I really like. I'm excited to see, but I think for predictions, it's always really funny. I feel like we can never, predictions are always really funny. And I think it's always hilarious when you have a lot of people, you know, be like, oh, well, I predicted this and this is happening. It's like, okay, cool.
It can be fun, but then you also have to put your hand up on the ones that you got wrong.
Exactly.
Nobody's predicted everything to be correct. There's stuff that I've predicted and I feel good about, and there's stuff that I'm like, oh, wow, that didn't work out.
Yeah, so, well, I mean,
it happens.
Yeah, I go back to what MLS when Javier Mascherano first took over Inter Miami.
Yeah.
I was very much like, I don't know if this is going to work, and I was completely proven wrong. I was like, you know what? Yeah, put my hand up with that one.
Well, but then there's a lot of people who were where you were, and then he won, and it's like, oh, yeah, he won. That's nice. And then went right back to where they were before, and it's like... Come on, you have to be able to admit it.
Yes, I think you gotta be able to put your hand up and be like, you know what, hey, I was wrong, or like, hey, you know what, maybe I got this prediction a little bit off, but you know, still cool, like in all the same thing. Like that's why, you know, I think especially with the World Cup, I always have, you know, predictions, but I don't know, I don't like to stick with them too much because I just like to enjoy it.
Well, it's different. Like, and I think in our role now, and this is, you're in a different category now. You can't just sit back and enjoy it and not make predictions. Yeah. You're a pundit. So you made predictions, and that's cool. Like the thing that I always want people to understand in the way that I make predictions is I don't mix up rooting. And when I tell you what I think is going to happen based on evidence, When I give you a prediction, it's based on what I'm seeing and how I think it will go, not what I would like for it to be.
Yep.
Those are two different things. So, and I think your picks, you went with France, and that's not going out on a limb. I went with Spain, which wasn't going out on a limb beforehand. And people have not a whole lot of people picked Argentina, honestly. I mean, I picked them to lose in the final. Portugal, to me, like, I can't justify that pick. I
can't justify it at all.
And that's the challenge. When you're being a pundit, and I know in the modern world, it's very easy to make picks either totally to play to emotion.
Yeah.
Or to do something that is bold and like performative.
Yeah.
I think if I'm going to ask people to listen to me and believe in what I'm saying, I got to be real with what I think will happen. And then I'll tell you what I would like to happen, which is a different conversation.
Yeah, very different. No, I think I said it to you on the game when I was in Chicago. I think it was you or John who asked me on AST, you know, who I thought.
No, I did. I put you on the spot. You put
me on the spot. I said I thought it was going to be France and Spain, and I thought France was going to win it. That's what I had said. I obviously now looking at Spain, you have a little bit of a question mark.
It's one game, though. But yeah.
It's still one game. It's like we talk about with all these group stage matches. We've only seen these teams play one time.
Uzbekistan almost tied it. They've been really good. I've been really, really impressed with Uzbekistan. I did not expect them to look this good.
Yeah, they look really good. I was really curious to see how they would look, and I thought that they would put a like decent performance out there. I like am actually more surprised, I think, now seeing it. Like this
I didn't know. I mean, they're such a tough one because they have so many players that you just don't know.
True.
So, I mean, that's the beauty of the World Cup. Like, that's what we learn when you go through this. I mean, we'll go through the groups now that we're in stoppage time here. It's Colombia up 2-1. They are definitely trying to hold on at this point. you look at Group A, who is back out tomorrow. Mexico impressed me. I thought they were better. They played better than I thought they would be coming in.
Yeah.
Korea is about what I expected. Czechia, I didn't really know, and I still don't really know how to feel about them. I hope I'll come to a decision after tomorrow.
Yeah.
And South Africa was disappointing to me because they didn't look. They had a really difficult matchup, but they were disappointing because they were never in the game.
Yeah, I also feel like too. I think the way that it started for them as well to go ahead and just go that.
You can't give up an early goal. And yeah, I agree with you. They were way too defensive.
Way too defensive early on. And then you give up the early goal and then you kind of continue to still do that. It doesn't work. And Mexico, I agree with you. I think Mexico is what I expected. South Korea, kind of the same thing as well. Honestly, that Mexico-South Korea matchup, I'm really interested. That one is going to be one I'm really curious to see.
It's going to be a fun one tomorrow night at 9.
It'll be fun. And then obviously for Czechia too, I mean, I thought that, you know, it was one where I still kind of have question marks. And
I just literally don't know how to feel about them because their goal's on a long throw in. And like, then they gave up two and I didn't really know how I felt coming in. I don't feel like anything has changed for me. Mexico is trending up. South Korea, Czechia are about where I kind of had them, or I haven't come to a conclusion yet.
Yeah.
South Africa, I'm disappointed in so far. Like, that's Group A.
And that would be, I think, tomorrow, especially with that match at Atlanta Stadium with Czechia and with South Africa. Yeah. I want to see how South Africa responds. I want to see what they do in this game.
I want to see how both of them respond. Yeah. Like, that's the thing to me is I think both have something to prove.
And they need crucial points, too.
They need to win because they're not going to go into the third game as a favorite. They're both going to be the underdog against Korea and against Mexico. So you've got to win this one to have a chance to go through as a third place. And Czechia is in a little bit better position with a -1 on goal differential. South Africa is on -2. If they win, obviously, that would at least cut it to -1 if they win by one. We'll see. Group B, everybody's on 1 point. Qatar impressed me.
Yeah.
I think if we're looking like on just reaction to these teams, Qatar impressed me. They were much better than I expected.
They were a team I had no idea what to expect.
They were a team that I thought was going to be bad because I had seen them and was like, nope, I don't rate them. And they got a point, which I did not see coming in that game against Switzerland.
Yeah, and they brought it to Switzerland, too, because
they were good.
Let them hang in the game. They let them continue to do it. And Qatar also battled in the game, too. It wasn't like – I feel like, again, and I said it, too, I do think Switzerland had moments and they should have put the game away, and they didn't. But Qatar also made it difficult for them to do it, and they looked very good. Like, I was impressed. I was impressed with Qatar.
That's why for me, that group, for me, Qatar was impressive. Switzerland was disappointing.
Yes.
Canada impressed me because they got something out of the game with Bosnia and Herzegovina. And I don't think Bosnia and Herzegovina was bad. I picked them to win the group. I don't lose feeling about them. Canada did impress me by getting something out of it. Qatar impressed me. Switzerland is on the negative side. If like just looking at it and giving you a reaction to each team and what we've seen. That's kind of how I feel on that group, which I still think could go any which way.
Canada plays Qatar next?
Yes.
I'm going to say this. This is my I'm curious to see that game because I think Qatar could do something.
If that happens, then Canada will have been a gigantic disappointment. And
I agree.
Qatar getting something out of Switzerland is impressive, but Canada should not be dropping points to Qatar. And if they do, then there's some serious problems and questions to be asked of the Canadian national team.
Yeah.
Uzbekistan and Colombia barking at each other.
Oof.
On a set piece. I got into it. A lot of talking. Always good. We're in the last minute of stoppage time. Group C, Brazil, I think you have to consider a little bit of a disappointment because of how they started, although they were the better team at the end. They kind of are who I thought they were. Like, that's about how I would have rated them coming in. So I'm not shocked. Same with Morocco. I'm not shocked by their performance. I thought they were really good to start, and then it came back to earth. Okay, so both of them are about the same. Honestly, and this might sound weird, in Group C, the team that impressed me the most is the team on the bottom in Haiti. I thought Haiti was the better team against Scotland. Scotland started well and then did what they do as Colombia puts the game away in the ninth minute of eight.
What a header.
Yeah, what a game. This was a really good one to close out match day one in all the groups. Again, Uzbekistan impressed me. Same. Colombia impresses me. Like, both impress me in this game.
Yeah, I agree.
Portugal's a disappointment, and DR Congo impressed me. Like, that group's fascinating to me because three of the teams were impressive.
Like, yes, and then Portugal.
Yeah, and Portugal's the one that everybody thought would win the group. Like, that's if when we're talking about how we feel about these games, like, this is different than a prediction. This is what we learned, what we feel, how we're thinking about it. Haiti impressed me the most in Group C out of from where I thought they would be to start with, because Morocco and Brazil were about what I expected. And Scotland, honestly, was about what I expected, if not a little disappointing.
Yeah, I'll tell you, for me, I'm a little disappointed in Morocco, just a tad. Yeah, just enough. Because you had the hot start. You were able to, I think, come in and be the better team for the first part of the game. You got the goal, and then you allowed for Brazil to come back in and do what they did. So for me, I'm a little disappointed in Morocco. But it's not like a crazy disappointment. Like, I'm very disappointed in Portugal. That's not the disappointment I'm feeling for Morocco. It's kind of the same feeling you have, where it's like you expected that from Brazil and Morocco. But for me, it's more of just the principle of Morocko. You had the momentum. You had the goal.
That's fair.
Come in.
That's fair. I mean, I expected them to be about the same, very even. I think they were.
Very even. Like, the whole thing.
If you had to judge it like a fight and somebody's got to take it on a split decision, I'd probably say Brazil was a little bit better for longer in the 90.
I agree.
Not by much, but a little bit better. So that game kind of went, Uzbekistan almost scored in the 11th minute. They hit the crossbar with a rocket. This game is bonkers, and it's still not over.
I love it.
It should have been over, but then the goal wouldn't have happened. But you had the barking back and forth. Uzbekistan's trying to get one more, which, as we've talked about, the goal differential for potential third place teams is really important. So that goal that they give up is important. And then to hit that rocket off the crossbar, nearly getting it back to a minus one, they don't. And that's the final whistle. And Colombia gets the win to close out match day one around the tournament. We'll go through the rest of the groups real quick. We're not going to stay up super late because there's a game at noon here in Atlanta in 12 hours.
You have an early start to the day. I am going to be I'm going to be hosting a watch party in Woodstock, so we'll have fun.
Excellent. Group D, obviously the U.S. was as impressive as anybody in match day one across the tournament. Australia was also very, very impressive in match day one. Turkey A was a disappointment. Paraguay, I was disappointed because I thought they would be, I thought the U.S. would win, but I thought Paraguay would be more competitive. And so they go in the disappointment category for me. We'll see how that goes over the tournament. I really want to see a response out of them.
Yeah, mine are the exact same as you in that group.
Yeah, that group's kind of self-explanatory right now. Group E, Germany, I mean, you have to say it's impressive. They scored seven. Cote d'Ivoire, I thought Ecuador was the better team in the 90, but Cote d'Ivoire gets the win. I would have to say that they've risen in how I feel about them, and Ecuador doesn't really fall. Like, I kind of I thought Ecuador would be better than Cote d'Ivoire, but not by much. And I think in the quality of the performance, that's probably about how it played out. But Cote d'Ivoire gets the goal, which is what matters.
Yeah, for Germany, yeah. It's one, obviously, you look at obviously playing Curaçao and getting the dominant 7-1 win. I'm interested to see, I think, the next couple of games between Ivory Coast and Ecuador for Germany.
Because
I think that'll give us a better line of where this Germany team is.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, because I don't know yet.
And that for me is obviously you put Germany, I think, on top right now, obviously, for everything. But I will say, like, you know, I mean, I'm still just one. I want to see Germany, I think, go against Ivory Coast and Ecuador. I want to see them go up against it and see where they stand there. I do want to see that.
They get Cote d'Ivoire in the next game, so we'll see. And Ecuador needs to bounce back with 3 points. And if those go the way that we think, then we'll have a different feeling on E by the time we get to match day three. Group F, I mean, you have to give Sweden a ton of props, even against Tunisia, who I didn't rate super highly. Sweden was that good. They were that impressive. They scored 5. Tunisia is them and Curaçao are the two biggest disappointments. I think you have to put Tunisia as an even bigger disappointment because they've already changed their coach. Japan and the Dutch, I honestly, in a weird way, I think the Dutch were a little bit better than I expected, but I had very low expectations based off their run up into the tournament and kind of what I've seen from them. They were pretty good at times. Japan, I think, can be better, but that game was a thrilling match. It was a great game. Yeah. Sweden's the big surprise in Group F so far, and we'll see how they do against Japan and the Netherlands, two better teams.
I think Japan, for me, I'm excited to see them build off of that performance because, again, it was an insane match. I mean, it was wild. But I do think Japan is a really solid side.
And I do too.
I think they're a really solid side. And I want to see, I think, in the next couple of games, I think for them to clean up a couple of those moments where maybe we saw them fall a little bit against the Netherlands. So I still, and it's again, like I feel like as well, like when we talk about this, you know, it's one game. We got to see, I think, a second one to really start to form some opinions. But I do like Japan a lot.
I do too, but this is where like how I felt about them coming in like plays into it. I think Japan is a quarterfinal team. Like I wasn't surprised by them getting a 2-2. In a way, I was a little disappointed because I think they could have won the game because I think they can be a better team than the Netherlands. So the 2-2, it's almost like, okay, I'm not disappointed because they're not that team that is consistently getting to that level yet.
Yeah.
I think they're capable. So I have higher expectations for them. And I can't say I'm impressed by the 2-2 because I think they're better than that. And I want to see them get there. And they just haven't quite done it yet. They keep getting close. Sweden was the impressive one in F. Group G, everybody's on 1 point. It's also one of the groups that I didn't, because we were dealing with the aftermath of everything from Spain and Cabo Verde, I didn't get a chance to really see a lot of Belgium and Egypt. I think Belgium not winning that game has to be seen as a disappointment.
Agreed.
New Zealand and Iran, I didn't have high hopes either way. I think Iran's a better team, but what they're dealing with is extremely challenging. And I do want to say one thing because it has been taken out of context, and I don't know what the tournament organizing plan was, that we have no access to that. We don't know. The way it has been portrayed is that the plan was changed and they were not allowed to stay in the U.S. and they had to go back. I think it's like a 40-minute flight to Tijuana, which it's like here to Charlotte. And a lot of people put it out there that like that is crazy. Atlanta United does that every game. Most MLS teams do that every game and fly back after the game. So like that's not in any way inhumane or anything like that. If they made them change their plans last minute, then that's a different conversation.
Yeah.
But the Atlanta United would never stay in Charlotte after a game. never. Like even in an Open Cup game, I mean, they've come back via bus from Nashville before. That was because of travel, because of storms where the flight got canceled because of stuff. But they drove back, you know, like that. The idea of traveling after the game and not staying, MLS teams do that all the time. NBA teams do that all the time. NFL teams do that all the time. Like that's common. So let's be careful. Like there's plenty of things to yell at the organizing of the tournament in various ways. And it's a huge tournament and there are things they have gotten wrong in my opinion, but that's one that be clear in what you're criticizing because a 40-minute flight is nothing in terms of after a game. It doesn't do anything. We come back from the West Coast. That's a 5-hour flight.
So, you guys do. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's happened. We one time did now in Cincinnati this year we stayed, but that was a mechanical issue. One time. Yeah. That's a whole nother story. One time there was a decision and it was very specific staying in Los Angeles after a game and coming back the next day. And I think it was because there was a midweek game on the Wednesday. It was a Saturday night game, if I am not mistaken. Or no, I think it was actually the other way around. Sorry. It was a Wednesday game in Los Angeles and it was a Saturday game at home. And the decision, and this is getting into the weeds, but this stuff's important when we're going to start, you know, yelling about leaving after a game. The decision was if you fly back overnight, the team is not going to train the next day anyway. And yeah. They'll do a short session on the Friday and play on Saturday. Mm-hmm. So the decision was stay in Los Angeles. You're not going to train the next day anyway. So sleep in, get a normal-ish night's sleep that you can when you're not in your own bed, but get a normal sleep schedule and then travel and you just have a travel day instead of a try to sleep till 2 p.m. day.
Yeah.
So that's the only time it's happened since we've flown charter that was like pre-planned to not travel back after the game. So again, I think there's been a lot of things with how Iran has been handled in the tournament that there can be questions about, but just be careful about thinking everything is a question. That's all I say.
Yep.
Sorry, I got a soapbox out on that. That was one that had been sitting with me for a minute, and I'm like, okay, people are firing off takes on this, and they don't know how it really goes. So I'm telling you how it really goes, at least in every team that I've had any interaction with and any other stories about, including like Hawks and Falcons and how they travel. So but Iran I thought was good on the field. New Zealand maybe was a little surprising in how good they were. Egypt, yeah. I think you have to give them some credit for getting the 1-1. Belgium,
yep,
bigger expectations from them.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Agreed. Group H is another one that is everybody on 1 point. Saudi Arabia was really impressive to me. Obviously, Cabo Verde was really impressive. We saw that firsthand. So your underdogs were impressive and your favorites were not in Uruguay and Spain. Uruguay was really good for the second half, but they didn't win. Spain was very good at times, but not that good.
Yeah.
Like I think Uruguay was better than Spain against a better team.
Yeah.
So that group's really interesting now with everybody on a point. Group I, Norway was super impressive, as they should have been against Iraq, but they did the business. France did the business in 45 minutes. I don't feel bad about Senegal. And no. I don't feel disappointed in Iraq either. I think they competed maybe a little bit better than I thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of like Norway's the interesting one in that group because I didn't really know how they would be at the World Cup level. Yeah. They haven't been here in so long, but they were really good.
Yeah, Norway was one. I think when I had initially saw the group ever and everything when it kind of all fell into place before Iraq joined. I had said, I mean, if we're going to talk group of death, there really is no group of death anymore. I think, especially with the expanded everything else.
I think the three will get through that group. Now, what level, what order they finish in, I don't know, but I think all three will go.
But I will say, I think that group, it gets really interesting. I still think that Senegal is a really solid side.
I think they're the third best team in the group, but the Senegal-Norway game is going to be a really good one.
That I was going to say, yeah, that's going to be good. I'm pumped about that. That'll be fun.
That is in match day two, so that'll be coming up Monday. That'll be a really good one because Norway, I think, in terms of sheer talent, should win that game. But in terms of pedigree, Senegal's got more of that. So it's going to be a very interesting one.
Yep.
Group J has exactly as type. Yeah. Argentina beat Algeria, as you would expect. Austria beat Jordan, as you would expect.
Yep.
That group comes down to Austria and Algeria and that game and what that looks like. Because Austria is another one that pedigree, they don't really have it. Algeria has more. I think Austria has maybe a little bit more talent, but not by much.
Yeah.
They don't play till match day three in that group. Group K, that's what we just finished with. Colombia. I'm trying to think of how I thought they were good. Because I thought both teams were good in this one.
Yes, both teams were very solid.
And I had different scale. And that's, I think, fair because I expected Colombia to win. So the fact that they won, I'm not taken away from them because I thought they won well. They played well. I expected Uzbekistan to lose, but they played well and they were in it. And both teams go up in my power rankings in this game.
And for me in Group K, honestly, I think if I'm looking at my top right now, in the group, just on what I saw, DR Congo for me is right now. I thought they were great.
I put Colombia ahead of them, but DR Congo is right there.
Yeah, I thought they played really well.
Yeah, they did. No, they were good. And that's why, I don't want it to come off Portugal was just bad. No, DR Congo was good. Portugal was bad in the exact way that I expected they would be bad.
It's the same thing we talked about a couple nights ago when it was the Spain and Cabo Verde. It was a lot of, Spain is just bad, when it's no, Cabo Verde was also very good.
Yeah, you can talk about both. And that's, I think at times it's just the winning team is good and the losing team is bad. And that's not how we've went through this. And I think it's important to go through it this way with everybody having played 90.
Soccer is one of the only sports where you could play really well, very well, and still lose.
And play bad and win.
And play bad and win.
You can't bet on playing bad and winning. And more often than not, if you play well, you're going to win more.
Yes.
But one result can define a tournament for you. And that's the balancing act with it. You have to try to play well to win more games. Let's not get it twisted. But in a 90-minute game, you can play bad and win. You can play really well and lose. We're kind of going through it of, okay, what did they do versus what we expected? Mm-hmm. And I think Group K, everybody is thumbs up except for Portugal, which, they did what I expected, but I still thought they would beat DR Congo. And the fact that they didn't and looked as meh in it, that it's thumbs down for me. Group L, England, they did what I expected, and I think they were better than I expected. Ghana, absolutely better than I expected.
Yeah.
Panama, I think they were the better team than Ghana, which is what I expected that to happen. The result didn't go their way, so I'm not down on Panama. They're about what I thought they were, with the exception of getting points. And Croatia, kind of the same thing. I don't think they were bad against England. England was just that much better. So England and Ghana get thumbs up for me on that one. They impressed me, whereas Panama and Croatia whelmed me.
We got two thumbs up for England and Ghana, and then more of a middle for
It's overwhelmed and underwhelmed. They were just whelming.
They were whelming.
Panama and Croatia were whelming.
They were whelming. That's funny. I like that. That's funny.
Yeah. I can't remember what movie I'm stealing that from, but it's from a movie.
I know. I will say, though, before we close things out, yes. Are you proud of me? I bought like 10 Panini packs. I've only opened like two of them. I still have 8 of them. Are you proud?
I'm surprised that you have that many still to open.
Listen, I'm trying to be better and not open all of them at once.
All right. Open one more pack.
Yes. Let's go. Thank God. I was hoping you'd say that. They've been staring at me the entire time I've been over here. And I was like, yeah.
Let's see what you get.
Let's see here. Let's see. All right, I got a player from Turkey. Let's see if I can get pronunciations this late at night. Let's see if I can do this. Wilmaz?
I'd have to see it. I don't think you're off.
Yilmaz? It's Y-I-L-M-A-Z.
Yeah, I think you're okay.
But yeah, I got him. Honestly, okay. Actually, I don't think I have him, actually. So this is great. Perfect.
Turkish can be a tricky one.
I did get the emblem for Turkey A.
Okay, cool. Turkey A pack. All right.
I kind of like that.
Even if they were disappointing?
They were a little disappointing, but it's okay.
They were thumbs down. They were an underwhelming team.
We have a Czechia player. This is also another very, sometimes a little difficult, but I got.
Yeah.
Yeah. This guy. Cool.
Thank you.
This guy. Ooh, I do. I got the squad for Iraq. I don't have that. Okay. That's nice.
All right.
Another Czechia player. Yeah. I'm not even going to try to pronounce this one. It's V-Y-D-R-A. Not even going to try this late. I'm not even going to try.
I think it's Vidra. Vidra. I think the Y is kind of funky.
Vidra?
I think, yeah, it might be more complicated than that.
When I got 2 DR Congo. I don't have a lot of DR Congo, actually.
You got a wild pack. How many Turkey and Czechia and DR Congo and Iraq?
I got two Czechia. I have 1 Iraq, just it's the squad. 2 Turkey A ones, and then I got 2 DR Congo.
That is the craziest pack I've ever heard of.
Wild, but I got 2
and
DR
Congo. No offense to those teams, but to have all of them in the same pack, that's crazy.
Oh, it's kind of wild, actually. There have been some of the packs where I've been genuinely, I'm like, whoa. The combinations of like what's thrown in there is insane. Mm-hmm. I'm like, all right, cool, I guess. It's been fun, though. I'm having a great time.
It's addictive. I think, because I've actually had people asking, it gets a little complicated with the World Cup schedule, but I think if we can try to pull this off Monday afternoon, late afternoon or middle of the afternoon into the early evening might be our sticker swap day at Brewhouse South Downtown.
Wait, like this upcoming Monday?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. That's so exciting.
I mean, we need to do it before we get deep into the tournament because things get really crazy. So
that's true,
kind of the sweet spot for it. So stay tuned. We will try to organize that and get it figured out.
I have a lot of duplicates. So
I've got a few and I've got another 50 box coming because I'm obsessed.
When I was filming today, I was really like taunted by like the 50 pack box that they had in there, and I really wanted it, and I stopped myself. I didn't buy it. I did think about it though, really hard.
I broke down because I did not get my album, so I needed an album, and since I've become obsessed, I wanted to go hardcover album instead of softcover album, and Amazon did a version of the Costco hardcover plus box, so that's what I ended up doing. They're taking all my money. That's all I know.
How much is the 50?
I mean, the 50 box by itself, pretty much everywhere is $100, like 99 and change. I got the hardcover with the 50. I think it was 124.
Oh, period. Okay.
Which is about like, I think it's a little bit cheaper than buying the hardcover by itself or in like a hardcover with 5 packs, which I think is what some have been.
Yeah, the Costco one that I got, it was 74.
But it was a 40 count box, right?
count. I got 40 count packs and then obviously hardcover is what I got. So
yeah, so that's a better deal than what I got, but I got 10 more packs. So,
but the packs are also $2 at a Walgreens, and I will in fact go in there and just buy 10 of them.
Yeah.
And then $20 and I go. Yeah. And the cashier at the front probably is like, you are literally 23 years old. What are you doing? And I'm like, shh. I'm like, don't say anything. I had a full conversation after I bought these, actually. We were talking about it, and she was like, I just had like a couple people come in and ask for it. She's like, and I don't get it, because they were like, you don't trade them. You just like put them in a book. And I was like, listen, I didn't understand it either. Again, my roommate, big baseball cards all over. Like, I never understood it. Now I get it. I understand it now.
You can treat them like baseball cards, and some people do, and that's where those variants come into play. Like,
I want to complete my book.
You want to complete your book, but you don't want to put a like red crumple variant sticker into the book if it's worth $500.
Some of the fails I've been seeing on like social media are so funny. Of there were like people putting that in the book, and then they're like, oh no. I'm like, man.
I mean, you just devalued it. You'd be better off selling it and then buying the card that you wanted and then having plenty of extra money left over, because the actual stickers are not very expensive.
I will say the Panini and the thing where it's like at the end of the World Cup, if you need like, if you're missing cards, you can go on and buy them. I was like, don't tell me that, because I will do it.
Well, that's, I mean, everybody tries to complete the book, and this one is very complicated because it's like 900 stickers and you've got those Coca-Cola ones that are weird.
Oh, I got those today.
Yeah. What did you get to that?
So I got Lamine Yamal is one that I had.
Weston, you've had that one. You've had Weston.
Yeah. I got Harry Kane.
Okay.
And then I got Edson Alvarez.
Okay.
So yeah, I got
you
them.
Still need six of those?
There's I need 10? Six of them. Yes. I need six of them. I need Joshua Kimmich, Santiago Jimenez, Anthony Robinson, Virgil van Dijk, Alfonso Davies, Jefferson Lerma, Lautaro Martinez, and Gabriel Mengales.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. That's why he mostly goes by Gabriel.
Brazil. It's Brazilian, so I figured it was a little more than... It's Portuguese, so it's definitely a little bit harder. So I'm going to have to do some... I'll go through some pronunciations, make sure I get that one right. But those are the ones that I am missing right now, of the Coca-Cola ones, so... I still want Marquinhos and Hakimi.
I have Marquinhos. I still don't have Messi, but I need to buy more packs. So they're on the way.
I want Hakimi and Marquinhos. So this is my calling card. Again, I have things to trade, but I want it.
Well, you got to have something good to trade. I mean, that's the thing. You can't just trade anything for Marquinhos or Hakimi. So
I could just do the baseball card thing and be like, I'll give you like 20 of these if
yes, you can do that, and that's how some of them go. Like the trading gets crazy. We'll see if we can pull this together next week and try to make it happen so we can all swap duplicates, and Maddie will be trying to rip everybody off and making bad trades, and we'll see how that goes.
I will be fair and nice.
That's debatable,
but if one of your Hakimis is missing, it wasn't me.
Yeah, anyway, that'll do it for this weird edition of Atlanta Soccer Tonight podcast / stoppage time / YouTube / podcast. Tomorrow, we will be live on the radio at 10 o'clock. Probably not a long stoppage time because Mexico and South Korea is at 9 o'clock. So when we join on the radio, that'll be the second half. We'll have a little bit of a stoppage time. I don't know where I will be. I might be here. I might be in the studio. I don't know yet, because that's how this tournament is starting to get. It's like, where am I supposed to be? How can I do what I need to do from where I am? All right, cool. Let's go. I know I'll be at Mercedes-Benz Stadium for a noon kickoff. I know I will be in South Downtown before that. The South Africa fans will be marching from South Downtown to the stadium at 9:30. Czechia fans, I think, are doing the 10:30 march in from the other side. That's how it went for game one. Then there's more games the rest of the day. So it is another very busy day in the World Cup as we start match day two tomorrow. We'll see who impresses us tomorrow. We'll see who disappoints us tomorrow. And we'll be talking about it on AST. And then Friday, USA, Australia, 3 o'clock. 92.9 will be at McRae's on the Beltline. We will be live from 6 to 8 for a post-game show on 92.9 The Game, talking about the U.S. men's national team and what they do in Game 2 against Australia, which, just based off everybody who watched Game 1, Game 2 could pass what Game 1 was, which became the most watched U.S. men's national team game of all time. And I think Game 2 is going to be even bigger. So we'll be talking about all that tomorrow as well, getting you ready for it. We'll see if Christian Pulisic trains. We'll see what Maurizio Pochettino says tomorrow. A lot of stuff coming tomorrow night, 10 o'clock, 92.9 The Game. Odyssey app, 92.9 The Game YouTube page. But for now, adios, everybody.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.